Hello, you're listening to Third Waves.
Third is a platform that amplifies underrepresented voices through print, events, and on the airwaves. You're joined by me, Tribe, DJ, and radio host.
Me, Daniela, writer, musician, and producer.
And myself, Rona, stylist, founder, and editor-in-chief of Third.
This is With My Niger Sisters. Welcome back. If you're tuning in for the first time, we recommend checking out the other episodes too, but you can also just dive in here with us. On this episode, Maria, Faith, Tribe, and Rona talk about gender and being Nigerian women.
So at Third, we obviously talk a lot about intersectionality and this whole idea of being third cultured, which, if you don't know, is the idea that you get like a first culture from both your parents, a second culture that which comes from the places that you were born or raised or live. And the third culture is supposed to be like this messy intermingling of it all. And obviously, like as like a British Nigerian person, I can really relate to that definition. But when I was considering like my connection to Nigeria, I felt like it was really necessary that I also considered like the fact that I'm British, and also the fact of my gender as well, the fact that I'm was always gendered as woman. So kind of in doing this series, I wanted to bring together a group of some of the amazing, awesome Nigerian women and non-binary people I know, and have us all sort of share and explore this shared identity. So this episode is all around being a Niger woman, and I'm joined by my guests. Who are them? So if you don't mind introducing yourself, letting us know who you are, what you do for our listeners.
Hello, my name is Maria Powell. I am a creative art director and graphic designer.
Hi, I'm Faith. I'm a multidisciplinary artist. I make visuals and music.
Hey, I am Tribe. I'm a DJ and radio host and presenter.
And I'm Rona. I'm the founder of Third and also a stylist. So before we kickstart, a fun question. What is something that you think Nigerians do best and everyone should think about adopting?
I'm not going to let my intrusive thoughts win, so I'm going to let someone else go first.
I think the way we express our pride to an extent, I think a lot of Western countries are grappling with how to be proud and patriotic. And sometimes it leans into directions that aren't necessarily healthy. And it sometimes means the denigration of other nations and countries, and indulging in parts of the history that's not necessarily healthy. And I think the way that Nigerians are proud, it's often leading into proud of the culture and proud of the expression of Nigerians and proud of like the identity of Nigeria. So I think it can often be a bit more healthy because it actually is proud about the things that make us Nigerian. Sometimes it leans into the unhealthy side as well, because it can be quite boastful and it can sometimes forget that there's other countries in Africa that have jollof rice, for example. So it leans into the unhealthy way, but it's always playful. So I think that is something that we do well.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Yes.
I would say we're super resourceful, like just using like things like, you know, unfinished butter, like as containers, and now in culture, that's what we're doing. We're all upcycling, but we've been upcycling for time. Yeah. So like, yeah, we're super resourceful, especially when it comes to like things which can be considered waste.
I agree
with everyone. And yeah, I think from my angle, it's just the pride and the celebration. And I think another thing is just adding like comedic value to everything. I think Nigerians are so funny, especially Yoruba people. We're so funny just even in the sound effects and our body language. Anything we do is a joke, genuinely. And I wish more people would accept and adopt that so we can just have laughs all around.
So this show is about being a Nigerian woman. And I want to ask you guys, were there any expectations growing up or even for you now around being a Nigerian woman?
I think there are loads.
Where would you start?
Where would I start? I just think like your role within everything, really, whether that's relationships or society, like you're just expected to play a certain role and carry yourself in a certain way or be a certain thing, and you're not really allowed to step out of those parameters.
I think growing up, I mean, I think I was fortunate to be a middle child. But my sister, I think there was a certain expectation placed on her that, you know, when my mom's not in, she is, you know, second mom in terms of making sure that the younger kids, i.e. me and my brother, our needs were met and that the house was clean and that food was cooked and things like that. And I feel like that, and we were, you know, obviously we've started breaking down what that actually means, you know, that adultification, particularly of women. And that, like, that is not placed on men or boys growing up as much. And my mom still kind of tries to say certain things, kind of like, oh, you know, because you're a woman, this stuff is needed, expected of you, you know. And I think the expression of femininity as well is another thing that is definitely placed quite firm on women. And it's like, kind of got tying in, I can't remember who said it, about these boxes need to be ticked in order to be kind of successful, or like your, you know, your mom can take pride in how they've raised you, like you've ticked all the boxes. And I think those aspects of femininity kind of feeds into it. Like if you want to get a good man, you need to make sure your appearance is of this level or like this, and you need to be able to cook, and you need to know how to look after the house and kind of submit to your partner in that, those particular ways. And I think it's interesting because it's not just Nigerian culture. There's a lot of overlaps with Western culture as well. Those things have been expected of women. And that's why people are complaining about the double shifts, you know, working at home with cleaning and looking after children, and then, you know, work at work. So it's a double kind of layover, I think.
One thing I will say, though, is that I think growing up in Nigeria and being mixed race, you're more viewed as white than you are as Nigerian. So I think the level of expectation on me was slightly different because of that. So I don't think there was like, the expectation was still there, but I think less so because my dad's white.
Growing up, and when you're old enough to understand, one of the first lessons you learn as a woman is your reputation, your name, the name that you carry. This is the name you have. This is your reputation. This is everything. You can't afford to tarnish your name. Don't bring shame to the family. And under the umbrella of shame comes these expectations of, you have to look a certain way, you have to do this. Even when you said the word submit, like, it's like it activates my fight or flight. And it's very much like, you know, like I said earlier, my mom, you cannot tell her what to do. So she's kind of picked and choose what traditions work for her. But then also she's given birth to five daughters who have also picked and choose what traditions work for us. And in our household, we're all feminists. Like, you can't tell us what to do. Like, I know it's not the greatest example to use, but you know how you would see like the Kardashians, they are like the women, they're the leads. And then the men come in and have to kind of adopt to that. That's how it is in our household. The women are the leads. Obviously, you have the man, you respect them, there's that level of respect. But in our household, we were also trained that when it comes to men, the respect is earned. We don't submit willingly. And you can't push us over. But then even still, there's still like societal views of being a woman and just what it means. And I think even for me personally, like how I express myself, and sometimes I can be very masculine. Sometimes I can be super feminine. And it's kind of like no one is happy with either. And it's kind of like the moment you train yourself to abide by these things, they're never going to be happy. There's always going to be something that's implemented. And I think seeing how other people turned out, quote unquote, or just hearing stories, I made the decision that I need to start rebelling from a young age. I don't even think it was like an intentional, conscious decision, but I think it was kind of like, yeah, that's not going to be me. I can't run. Like, yeah, I'm not that guy. And then, yeah, I took it all the way and had a baby at 16. That was like my peak act of rebellion. And then I think from there, it was kind of like, well, you know, I've already done what I've done. So it's kind of like, there's no more shocks after that. But yeah, even me having my daughter, I don't really place expectations on her being a woman. I think I just make her aware of what things are in the world, like what is being said. And then I've made her aware of reputation and like your name, you have to protect it, all of that stuff. But it's not in the same sense of like, if you don't do exactly what I tell you to do, you're going to bring shame on the family and you're going to bring shame. So I try to remove the aspect of shame, because I think that's something that really governs us, either consciously or subconsciously. And it would be great to break that altogether and just not have that there. But there's literally years and years and years of generational tales and pressure and all of that stuff. So it's almost like you're born into it and you have to spend energy and time unlearning a lot of stuff to be free. So yeah, it comes with a price, but it's just like not everyone is willing to pay that price.
With me, when you were actually saying that whole term second mum, this would get thrown around with me. And I'm actually a middle child-ish. I'm also a middle child and an older child because there's a massive gap between me and my older brother. And I think I was kind of like an easy job for my mum initially, just because growing up, I was kind of a bit maternal. Like when my younger brothers were born, I was absolutely in love with them. So I was just like, be with me all the time. So like taking on certain chores, I think I probably put myself in front of stuff. But the friction always came up when it was like, you're a girl, you should do stuff like that. And then the men kind of have more power. I think from very early on in my life, I was just like, this is kind of like, doesn't make any sense. Do you know what I mean? Because someone is maybe even, you know, a man or an older man to me, that doesn't mean like I have to like listen to them. Doesn't mean I can't do the same things as them. And so being restricted in that way, it was the space I then started to disappoint in. And I was just like, well, I'm not obviously going to fit this category of the good child, you know what I mean? In this context anymore, am I? But I guess it's been interesting because I was thinking about the ways that we navigate these expectations, like at different stages of our lives. And so I think when I was younger, I think I would more easily just be like, no, like I'm not going to listen to this. Yeah, but then there was like a point when I became older where I was like, ooh, should I be listening to some of this? Do you know what I mean?
Definitely.
And I just wonder how we've all kind of navigated some of these pressures put on us.
I definitely agree. Sorry.
No.
I agree. I think my initial reaction was just rebel, 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 rebel. You cannot tell me what to do. I've always been like a little bit too independent for my own good. The older I get, the more I'm like, I feel like you have to break the rules to know which ones suit you. You can't just play by the script. And so the older I get, like even, you know, the desire to be able to play that role in my family and cook meals and do all those things, now that's something I want to do, and like from my choice, because I see the value in that for myself. It's not because I feel this expectation, even though I know that's there, now it's a genuine desire from me because I want to, like, I know how nurturing it was for me to receive that from my mom, and I want to be able to give that to my family. So I think the older I get, the more I see. I think when I was younger, I was seen as very rebellious and very non-traditional. And the older I get, I see myself, I feel a little bit more like aligned with those traditions or expectations, but I'm comfortable with that now because I've assessed that for myself. It's not someone else coming to tell me, oh, you have to be this and do that. And I think there was a part of me that almost thought, especially like growing up, thinking like, oh, I don't fit the mold for this, so I'm not even going to try. And like, do you know what I mean? Mm. I'm not even going to try. I'm just going to go the complete opposite direction. But it's sort of coming full circle and like finding that, yeah, maybe I do want to do all these things, you know?
I agree. It's been an interesting journey. I think because me and my brother are so close in age, and I think my mom has had to learn with how we've grown up. So, for example, my brother loves cooking, and he will, you know, be there, you know, especially at certain ages, standing next to my mom, picking up what he wants to pick up, and then, you know, also learning and experimenting and trying things out for himself. Whilst me, I will only cook when I feel to, and the joy is there, and it's an expression for myself or for other people around. And so seeing how there's certain things that are stereotypically, traditionally gendered in a particular way, but, oh, the daughter's showing less interest, but the brother, you know, the son is showing more interest, and having to go, actually, individually, this is not necessarily going to always be aligned. And I think my mom's noticing that or has noticed this and have had to adapt to certain aspects of it, being like, okay, that's just the way it is. That's their personalities. I think as well, I agree in terms of when you get to a certain point and you pick what aspects of the, I don't know, gender traditions that, or even participating in a culture you want to like participate into. So for example, when I was traveling with my mom to Nigeria recently, I felt like I became like a, it felt to an extent like a servant girl. You know, in the sense of this, like, there was one point where she was like, the floor just dusted, and I was like, there's nothing there on the floor. But then I was like, okay, let me go and dust it. It's cool. Like, I'm on this trip with her, and you know, I'm trying to soak in as much as possible. So I'm going to do whatever you say, you know, it's cool. And I think that wouldn't happen in everyday life. There's certain things where I'd be like, hey, this doesn't make sense to how I want to do things, or doesn't make sense to me in general. So I think, as you were saying, as you get older, you pick and choose on what makes sense the most to you. And I've definitely been on that journey. So there's times where I would stand next to my mom now and be like, okay, show me how you do this. And then there's times where if it feels like it's being imposed, I don't want to be participate if it doesn't make sense to me. And I think that's just growing up in the general, right?
So another thing you were talking about, Maria, is obviously like learning from your mothers and your sisters. And I think I have two sisters and my mom as well. And I definitely think like you can take it for granted when you're younger, but having them as role models in a weird way, you just soak up certain things via osmosis. And I was wondering like, you know, whether we have any examples from our own personal experience around like this whole idea of being able to learn from like the positive examples of being a woman in our culture. I think for me, it's definitely been like, you know, my mom's just super capable. Mm. You know, like she would be this mom who could like cook, but then go to work and like do a 12-hour shift, but then like make it back to do all these things, and would just do it like it was nothing. And I think I definitely soaked that up when I was growing up and have similarly become this sort of person. And even I can say from my dad, even though I don't have a connection with him now, like when I was growing up, he was like studying to become a lawyer. And he then became like an immigration lawyer in this country for many, many years. And I think just like soaking up that whole process of understanding, like kindness, like understanding that there was a barrier for him because he was Nigerian, but he somehow just persevered through it all and then became like this successful person. I was like, oh, I can do that too. And I'm kind of in a better position. Yeah. So I was wondering what sort of role models we have had.
I think for my mom, even though I have said multiple times, you can't tell her what to do, I was able to see the flip side of that. And I feel like my mum has always been a heroine. I've always seen her as like a stay-at-home mum. I haven't really seen her as like someone who would be out. Like, she was always around. She was always at home. Even though she'd be shouting to do the chores and stuff. Like, I just know that she was just always there. Or if we needed something, it'll be like, oh, mum, like, I need food for food tech in the morning, like all of that stuff. And somehow it would just happen. And then I also think, obviously, now I'm older, realizing that she had five kids and I have one of my own and how tiring and long it is. Now I can understand like why she might behave the way she did. And just, she was probably going through so much herself and raising five kids at the same time. Like it was crazy. So I think I've taken that aspect from her, just in the sense of making something work, trying to be as solutions-based as possible. And also I have that like rebellious nature in me. And I feel like you said, you saw your dad and like picked up on different things. Like with my dad's a musician, and I saw him be just himself, like a creative. He embodied himself, he embodied his music. He was very successful at what he did, and I'm able to take from that and take from my mom and then marry the two together. And I'm really understanding with age what parts work, what parts kind of come out more in different scenarios, but also understanding that even though our parents came together and they were two strangers, I'm blessed enough to have their personalities be the perfect yin and yang for me and how I want to navigate in the world, and just me being so different. And so I think I'm the black sheep out of all of my siblings. Not necessarily in a negative light, I'm just the most left out of all of them. And just being younger, not really understanding why I am. I just felt like it just was, like I knew I couldn't fit in. But then being older, being in my 30s now, I'm being like, oh, this is why, and these are the bits that I've taken from each parent. But yeah, even as well, like my sisters, I have my mom that like showed me all of like a great example of just how to navigate in the world and how to like not be trampled on. And then I have four sisters who are very, very strong. Like all, like imagine me, there's five of me. That's how we are as siblings. Like we're all feminists, we're all very strong women. Like the group chat, or sometimes I even have a video one time that I was just like filming like content to post on Instagram, but I was on a call with my sisters. So when you play it back, you can see me like playing with my hair, but you can hear in the background my sisters be like, you can't tell us what to do. And they're going off, and they're just like, no, men don't deserve this stuff. And I was just there like, oh, this is just a very normal conversation. So I have just a lot of things that are ingrained in me that, I mean, just finding a balance, because sometimes there are certain things where I'm just like blindly ignorant and like, you cannot tell me what to do. I'm not budging. I'm stubborn. But yeah, I just think you just have to see what works in each area and just learn how to find a balance and how to navigate properly. But yeah, I definitely think I'm blessed with a lot of role models in my life.
Yeah, I definitely say like my mom is a massive role model to me, especially like we had a very strained relationship growing up. And I think my dad had a much, much larger influence on me as a child. Just for a number of reasons now, looking back, you know, being a woman, I can see what she was going through, but she was very unhappy throughout my childhood. So we never really had a basis for connection. And now I'm getting older, I see, and I never really saw myself reflected in her, I think, as a child. And now I see how similar we are, really. I think the older you get, you just kind of see that with your parents anyway. But yeah, definitely like in the last, especially this year since we've been living together, I think she's definitely become, or I've just realized what a massive role model she is for me. And I think like, not to do the whole, because I'm tired of black women being strong, but like she is the strongest person I know, like by a mile. Like nothing, like a lot of the things I go through, I kind of put it into perspective with what she's come through in her life. And I'm like, you need to stop. Can I swear? Yeah. You need to stop fucking complaining. Like, do you know what I mean? Like if she can go through all this and be at this point in her life, like you've had it a lot easier. So just kind of get over yourself.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's definitely been a massive influence. And now I think I actively look to her, like, now for advice and for, like, yeah, just how to navigate life and certain situations, because I know that she has, like, the wisdom to help me. And, like, she's your mum, like, she's never going to judge you. She's never going to, like, yeah.
With role models, I'm going to say two separate things. I would say, in terms of Nigerian love, I would say my neighbours growing up. So where I lived, I had a Nigerian family who had a big family, loads of kids, and we'd go around there all the time. And when my mum was going to work, she'll drop us over there as well. And just seeing this couple, middle-aged, married, not to say their relationship was perfect, but seeing them stick together, raise these children who are our age, and, you know, I think it was being able to see that and see that modeled, that I, as I've gotten older, have appreciated, just how a Nigerian couple, again, not perfect, definitely can, you know what I mean, say all sorts of things, but just the fact that they have chosen to stay together and to make things work and to raise their family, in the process, I think I appreciate that. And then I would say, in terms of my mom, like, super independent, again, just making things work. So if anything broke in our house, she'll be there in a vest trying to fix it. Like, you know, and again, her career trajectory, like, she was pregnant with me when she was, like, cleaning them legal rooms in Russell Square or wherever. And then to make it as a nurse and high up as a nurse as well, like, just wanting more for herself career-wise. Like, and then just all aspects of herself. I think as you get older, as you said, you kind of start to realize, you know, how, what it took to get to the point that they're at right now. And you start to appreciate it. So, yeah, I would say role model wise, both of those have kind of, especially my mom, has shown me how it is. And I think I take that from her as well, that level of independence. I think it's something that I've internalized and know that whatever it is, whatever burden or, you know, issue, you can just get it done yourself. But and I think to a certain extent, I'm trying to learn, actually, there are limits to independence and maybe, you know, being able to kind of lean on other people is also a positive thing as well. So, yeah.
And I think lastly, because we're kind of in the pipeline or actually are like parents. So what bits do we think we'll borrow from our parents in terms of the way we were parented or being a role model even for kids around us? Because you don't necessarily need to be a parent to be a role model.
I would say with my mom, even though she can be stubborn, there are moments where I can see she's actually reflected and she is willing to adapt. You know, okay, you said this to me, I'm going to show my face to be screw-faced at this moment in time, but I will come to you after I thought about it and, you know, I will change according to what has been presented. And I think that, like, as I've gotten older, I've realized all the times that she's done that. And I think that's something that's actually can be quite treasured, especially as Nigerians. Sometimes we can be quite hard-headed and not wanting to adapt. And I think that's something that my mom has exhibited multiple times. And I think I always want to be able to kind of do for other people around me, especially children. Yeah,
I agree. I think that's something I've been quite fortunate in with my relationship with my mom, is that she is self-reflecting and, like, she's not too proud to, like, admit when she's gone wrong in the past or done things that may have affected our relationship. And I think that's sort of just meant a lot to me as a child, like, just recognizing, for your parents to recognize, because I think also, like, with a lot of, like, traditional Nigerian parents, it's like the parent is always right and, like, you can't really respect your elders, like, do you know what I mean? There's no room for, like, accountability on their part. And I think she's shown that and I really appreciate that, but also just, like, a level of freedom to explore who I am. And which I know must have been, like, scary for them at some points, like, but they let me do that. And I think that's been a really big part in me, yeah, just, like, figuring out who I am and like what I'm meant to do in the world, because I was given some freedom to do that. And I definitely want to do the same for my kids and nurture their interests, even if they're not my interests. So yeah.
I think for me, being a parent already, something that I didn't really see much, not necessarily from my mom, but just Nigerian culture in general, I think is reassurance. Mm. I think there's a lot of comparison that goes on growing up. Yes. Oh, you know, but you didn't get A, 100%. But this person got A in class. Why didn't you get it? Things like that. Not really paying attention to like personal interests, because I also, now I'm older, I understand that like when you have a child, you want the best for them, and they are, our parents' generation are still operating in that generation. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily take into account that a lot of the stuff they did or may have done won't apply now, especially when it comes to like jobs, houses, all of that stuff. They just still think, oh, you know, get married, get a good job, buy a house. It doesn't work like that anymore. So I think just for me as a parent, I really try to be aware of my generation and also try to understand and keep an ear on my daughter's generation and what's going on, and seeing if the things that I say to her can apply. Mm. Understanding that, okay, like you said, my interests might not always be hers, or I might not really understand, but I need to take a step back and be like, this is what you like. So let me just see what it's about, and let me see where I can support you. The reassurance, like I said, like constantly, even in the beginning when she was just born, it took me like a while to like say, I love you. It just wasn't like, it didn't feel right. It was just, I just felt really weird to just say, and I'm thinking that's my own child, like saying, I love you out loud. Like she knew I loved her, but it was just like saying, I love you. And then I had to say to myself, I need to break this mold. Like, even if it's uncomfortable, I need to do it until it becomes a norm. And now like, it's literally just the norm. Like if I was to come and get water from her or take a car, I'd be like, all right, see you later. Love you. Bye. Like, it's just a constant thing that's said in the house, and just reminding her that, you know, she is special. She is her own human being. Even though I would like her to do certain things, if she doesn't want to do them, she's not going to disappoint me or make me upset. Like, she's her own person. She didn't ask to be born, and she can choose the things that she wants to do. So I said to her, like, I'll let you do many things in life. There are only two things that I'm going to force onto you, and that is to be a DJ and to be a graphic designer. Those two things, I'm like, those are the only things I'm going to force onto you, because I know in my generation and in hers, it can be great. It's not the same as like going to uni and having the qualifications. They don't really apply anymore. But being a DJ or knowing graphic design can open doors, which is crazy, because she doesn't understand the same way we would say to our parents, like, oh, I don't want to, like, my mom wanted me to be a gynecologist. I didn't even know what it was until I got to school. My friends are like, oh, that's a fanny doctor. And I was just like, oh my God, I've been telling everyone that I want to do this. Obviously now as an adult, I would do it. Like, it's not an issue. I'm very big on like women and women's health. Like, I would do it. But at the time I'm thinking like, I don't want to do that. But my mum like sat us down and like told each child, this is the profession that you're going to have. Like, you're going to be a lawyer. You're going to be this. And we were just kind of like, all right. But then also like me pursuing gynecology at the time, but I was so bad at science, I would get like the second or the lowest mark in the class. And I was like, bro, I can't do this. This isn't my calling. Do you know what I mean? And then it took me being 18. I got to 18 and I was like, Mom, I'm not good at this. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. And then she was like, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to do media studies. And then it's kind of like, what? And then as soon as she was just like, okay, cool, like, do it, I'm getting A's, like, immediately off the rip. So I've seen, I know how it feels to be good at something or wanting to do something and it's not nurtured due to like just lack of awareness or just not understanding. Like, it's, I'm sure a lot of our parents or a lot of like relatives now have seen the amount of money that's in YouTube, and it's like, oh, let's make a YouTube channel. I think we should start on YouTube. I'm like, bro, like, we missed the boat. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not the same anymore. Like, we could have gotten early, but you guys didn't really understand, you didn't care for it, you didn't support it. And now whatever. So yeah, there's just, those are like some of the main things that I really want to instill into my daughter. And I think I'm blessed because unintentionally, I think I've set a good pace for her. Because even when I joke around, I'm like, oh, you want to be me so bad. And then she's like, yeah, I do. And then I'm just like, get your own life. But yeah, like I really do appreciate those things. Like she's literally like a mini me. Like we wear the same clothes, same shoes, all of that stuff. And, but I'm still like, yo, like I know you want to be like me and you see the things that I do, but I still really try to encourage her own independence. And even like, sorry, I'm waffling, last point. Yeah. Even like, the music that she listens to, she's in the TikTok world. I'm not. And I do feel old a lot of the times, but I remember I walked into her room and she was listening to some like mad music. I was like, bro, what is this? Like I haven't heard you listen to a song from beginning to end. All you're doing is listen to sped up, mashed up songs, like compilations. Yeah, compilations. And then I then took a step back. Like once I said whatever we laughed about, I took a step back and I was like, this is probably how my mum felt when I was listening to grime and listening to Riddims and downloading stuff from LimeWire and all of that. And then I was like, let me just keep my mouth closed. And then I just got on with my day.
It's quite interesting. Something that I was wondering, are parents all migrants to the UK? Because I there's that whole thing about, I guess, that pressure that's sometimes placed on professions, like we said before, safe careers and stuff like that. And I guess maybe as second generations, we can give that scope to the people around us, whether it's our children or whoever, that, you know, they can explore that career path because we can recognize that there is not as much risk. There is more scope to explore. And that survival of having to survive, to succeed in a new country is not there on in our generation, if that makes sense. So it like hearing all our stories and even being sat down and being told what profession is going to be the most, you know, like we said, the safest or make the most sense, I guess there's scope for us to be like, we're going to do this differently. And actually what we see as being successful is a lot more wider than what our parents might have seen.
So sorry. No, just I think beyond even just being migrants, I think it transcends that. It's just a Nigerian, it's so ingrained in our culture, because even I was here as like an international, like living in Nigeria, there was still that emphasis on, because I just think it's like almost like an awareness thing. Like there wasn't even the awareness that like going to like in school, I didn't know you could be a creative. I didn't know what creative was. It was like, what, it was never even an option. Like I had no idea. So I think, yeah, culturally it's just very ingrained in like these, and I think it is a safety thing, because you know, you get a certain career, you're guaranteed to make X amount of money and da da da. But yeah, I think it transcends even like just being a migrant in a different country. It's just a very Nigerian thing.
When I actually think about it, because I was quite academically strong. And so weirdly, that meant that I never really had masses of pressure put on me in terms of like what you're going to do. Because everyone was just like, you're going to do something great. Do you know what I mean? So it was only when I like kind of finished, even when I did English literature, everyone was kind of a bit like, you sure you just want to do English? You don't want to do like, do you don't want to do law?
Physics.
And then it was like, okay, do English and I'm sure you know what you're doing. And then I came out and I was like, yeah, so I'm going to be a creative. I'm going to like do stuff for fashion magazines. And they were like, have you lost your head? Yeah. Have you lost your head? Like, I think that's when my mom was like, what the fuck has gone wrong? But I think because of that growing up, weirdly, like I had quite a strong, like, I think also because my mom had like a big space between me and like my oldest brother, like with me, my friend, like my relationship with my mom was almost like quite friendly. Do you know what I mean? I have a good friendship with my mom. But the one thing she did give me as well as having that friendship was like a layer of respect, like awareness of respect. And I do sometimes like now as an adult, if you know what I mean, I'm kind of like grateful for that. And just because I know what I'm like, I'm a very free-spirited person. So I think with kids, I know that like, I look at my relationship with my niece and she knows, like, she can do what she, like, she'll, her mum would be like, don't say that to Auntie Rona because she'll slap you. She'd be like, Auntie Rona's not going to slap me. She loves me. Do you know what I mean? So in a weird way, I think the thing I would keep, make sure your children understand respect, just because in the world we're living in right now, it can be make or break. And that's not the respect of, you know, just respect your elders because they're older than you. Do you know what I mean? It's like the respect of understanding how to navigate the world and navigate different situations in a way that's going to be fortuitous for you. No?
I was just going to say, off the back of Faith's point about it being a Nigerian thing, I think education ties in with pride. That can also fall into the pocket of classism. It's like, I have a PhD. I am this person. You it's have to, status. You yeah, it's a level of status. And I think that's as well something that's subconsciously ingrained. It's like, okay, cool, I want you to do well and have something to fall back on, but at the same time I want a reason to brag to my friends. And you hear like aunties be like, oh, my son's an engineer, my daughter's a brain surgeon, all of this stuff, and then you know, you'll have your poorer mum be like, oh yeah, well, my daughter's a graphic designer. And it's just kind of like they don't understand, but then the moment you just mention money, then suddenly they have a reason to, oh, you see the sign my daughter did this is all of that stuff. I think it just comes with a level of pride and classism at times. And I feel like our generation are just kind of seeing that it just doesn't apply anymore. Like, I can't go up to someone and be like, oh yeah, I'm a graphic designer, my daughter's this. They're gonna look at me like, so?
Yeah.
It just doesn't mean anything anymore. It doesn't apply. So, and I think as well, there is thankfully more of a respect, like you were saying, there's a respect on just jobs in general and just knowing that life is hard. People need to get by whatever job they have, as long as they can keep the lights on, whatever they're doing to get by, as long as they're not hurting themselves or hurting anyone, do what you're doing. So yeah, I think that's something that we're doing that I hope we continue to do with our children, and hope that goes on as well.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for being my guests in this show.
Thank you.
Please let our listeners know where they can find you, also what they can get from you. That was the thing I said before and that was wrong. Again, what they can hit you up for.
Okay. You can find me on Instagram at Maria Pearly, MariaPearly. And I guess you can hit me up for anything creative. It's just too broad. So just, just holler me and then we'll just see what happens from there.
You can find me on Instagram as well. Digidietho, DIDUDIETHO. Kind of similar to you. There's a broad range of things, but I guess mostly visuals, pictures, films, creative direction, and music.
And you can hit me up about music or your travels. And I am Tribe at Tribe Official. That's TRYB.official.
And I'm Rona. That's Rona spelled phonetically. So at R-O-E-N-A. And you can hit me up about brands. If you've loved this episode, please email us your thoughts, comments, suggestions. We'd love to hear them. You can write to us. You can send us a voice note. And if you do, we'll potentially read them out on an episode.
The first thing that I want to say is when Rona was saying how she, like, her family was like, why are you doing styling after literature? Like, quote, have you lost your head? That literally, I literally thought that when she told me she was going to get into styling, because we'd studied literature together at uni. And I think what that obviously completely changed in my mind is what, like, fashion and styling can do. So, like, 100% hand on heart, ignorance speaking, when she first said that she was going to do styling, and I was just like, what the hell? And like, also that I think there's definitely more respectability in certain, in like, sectors now than there probably would have been before, but just to take Rona as an example, like to have someone really smart and thoughtful working in a sector that in a sector that you wouldn't necessarily associate with such deep thinking, really, like, it's just so important to have those kind of people. No, that was a compliment.
I'm taking a mic. But in a sector that doesn't require deep thinking.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that's the perception that people have that fashion is vacuous.
Vacuous. He ain't holding back. I love it as well. When you say, that's what people say.
Every season, there needs to be a moment of me being completely savage. And
by the way, Rona's sitting right here.
But she's laughing, so it's okay. Yeah. Plotting my death, maybe. But yeah, I also really loved when Maria was like, if you want to become a DJ or a graphic designer is the way that you're going to meet people.
Yeah.
And like, you should definitely do those as jobs. Was she being serious? I mean, it sounds like that's really cool. If that's how she like.
Yeah, I think it.
It's very unconventional.
Yeah, you're right. I think the creative field, especially in those kind of worlds, you do naturally meet a lot of people and it does help to get you where you might want it to be going. I can only speak to myself because my goal is DJing, so I kind of stopped there. But I think in the creative fields, like networking and being in creative spaces, you know, and I agree with you, like with many Nigerians, especially once they've migrated, but even within Nigeria, success is very important. And if you put so much effort to come to this country and you have a child who's smart, you know, you're not looking to them to be doing something creative. You want them to do something that has security and can provide, as we mentioned in the episode. So even as a person who's even contemplating veering away from the path that has been set for you by them is quite a brave and sometimes intimidating thing to do, because how are you going to tell your parents that you can offer stability, or you're going to find a way to offer yourself that stability and make it worthwhile and make all the effort and investment worthwhile?
Yeah. I should have made this joke to Maria directly, but I just thought, like, imagine her daughter is probably just like, Mom, I just really like maths and I really just want to be an accountant, please. Yeah. And she's like, no, you have to become a DJ.
Yeah.
Or a graphic designer.
Yeah.
Yeah, such an amazing conversation. I think something else that what I thought was like really amazing was like talking about the role that shame plays in education and how much it was used as a tool for communicating boundaries or codes of behavior. And it kind of made me think that, like, even beyond interacting with young people, kids or whatever it might be, like how much we maybe use it with each other, like how much we cite things as like using like shame as a kind of like communication tool, and how much we can all just like take a leaf from this this reversal and just like stop using that kind of language.
Give me an example.
I mean, if it comes to like relationship stuff, I think people have ideas about how relationships should be, which are inherited, or things about gender. And I don't know, I don't want to get too specific, but maybe not without like, without using a specific example, I think the kind of language around it is like, oh, what would people think if,
yeah,
or like, what would your parents say if, or like, oh, what do you think your partner's going to say if,
yeah,
this kind of like, and it's just like, well, what does that mean? Like, why is that the question?
Yeah.
And I thought that was...
That's true. I think, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is when you are, in some ways it's good that we live in a bit more of an individualistic society where we can like shake off some of those community burdens and go, no, this is what I want to do for myself. and people either lump it or love it. Whilst I can imagine in certain communities that burden is a bit more heavier to have them like to consider what the people around them will think and breaking away from that.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing. And that sense of shame might feel a bit more heavier. Depending on the person, right?
True.
Just some thoughts.
Yeah. And then like in that kind of made me think of as well, sometimes it's like, oh, but sometimes you just let people live their lives.
Yeah.
Why are they having to carry the burden of like the family or like the stuff around or whatever? It's just like, they're an individual person.
Yeah. And their path is their path.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of again goes back to that respectability politics maybe again.
yeah, exactly. Because what if I was like, I want to be a street cleaner or someone who hangs posters on the street, you know, like something that is not deemed valuable, but in myself, I feel there's value in it, and people just need to kind of go with it, right?
Mm.
And I shouldn't feel the sense of shame in what I find interesting and what I want to pursue.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of digging into what is it that society deems as respectful, respectable.
Yeah.
And that kind of shame is the opposite of that, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that I really enjoyed was y'all's I've become American.
Keep it in.
How y'all talked about pride in a way that was felt quite liberating to me, because I think I don't know if this is cultural or whatever, or maybe just me personally, like I feel like sometimes I find it difficult to talk in a prideful way or you think of pride as a good thing because it so easily becomes pridefulness and it's like a fall. What is it, like pride becomes
before the fall,
comes before the fall, sorry.
Yeah.
Those kind of like thinking. And like pride, I don't know, I feel like it's quite difficult emotion to carry with dignity almost.
I can't speak for everyone. I do feel Nigerians, we do it. I don't know if I say we do it well, but we definitely do it. And it's quite interesting because I feel like British people can be quite self-deprecating. Like, yeah, you find people who have pride, and I feel like to a degree it might even be like it will exhibit itself in different ways depending on the community, like class and things like that. But the way that Nigerians have it, especially from my perspective of Yorubas as well, it is very much a sense of knowing who you are, knowing the culture and the people you come from, and what you are willing to take and what you're willing not to take, and not to let anyone around you ever kind of diminish that. And whether it's even pride in what you, like I said about the weddings, like I can provide all of this and you're going to see how much I can provide by this wedding, you know? I think it's something, especially as growing up in Britain, that we can take elements from and really meet that virtue somewhere in between rather than the extremes. I think
but definitely I want to take a leaf out of like, there is a good way of being prideful, and is the kind of like celebratory aspect of it that could just be done more, for sure.
100%.
Just wanted to like put a kind of like an underline on another thing that was said, which is like the adultification of girls, which kind of goes hand in hand with this like, oh, girls are naturally more mature than boys or whatever. And it's just like, I think, yeah, it was good to kind of have that talked about, because that's real fucked up. But yeah, I think the last thing that I wanted to say was just like this concept of being a role model. I can't remember who said it, maybe it was Rona, but the idea of like, because obviously Murray was talking about how she educates her child and whatever, and like I don't have any children and I don't have that many young people around me, so like Rona was talking about being, how to be a role model to her niece that she's obviously close with and see often. And I think there's also like this thing of like just being role models to each other as women, or as like non-binary or like non-cis identity, whatever it might be, or just like to other people, like in how to talk about gender. I mean, like, you know, that wasn't really what we were talking about. I wasn't involved. You were talking about. But yeah, this idea of like role model, like we can all be role models to each other, whether there's an age difference or not.
100%.
Like, there's this guy that I've started, like, I go to the gym and there's this kind of older guy who's in his 60s. Like, we're just always in the gym at the same time. And we kind of start to have this, like, friendship, relationship. And we have a lot of differences. We come from very different, like, places, age, all the things. And it's just, like, very interesting. We're kind of, like, we are modeling to each other things that, like, we wouldn't get otherwise.
Yeah.
And it's just quite interesting.
I love that, actually, because I think it's something that's actually a hot topic point right now. Where we've come out from the 2000s, where we've idolized celebrities and sports and actors and things like that, I do think there's a shifting of the tide in a sense of what we value, even historical figures, who we value and why do we value them. And it might not be, oh, I value this person. It might be, I value the way they specifically do this. And that's something I would like to learn from. Like you said, that person at the gym. So you might not know much about his whole life, but that's very specific thing. And that's someone in your community, rather than someone who's aspirational, who's out on a pedestal outside of your world. And I think that shift is such a big thing, because then we're looking at each other, learning from each other, supporting each other. So looking laterally rather than, I don't know, upwards.
Yeah.
And I think it's a big, good step as a thing to do.
Are you a Niger babe, know a Niger babe, or want to get to know one? If you've listened to the show and want to keep the conversation going, send us a message with your thoughts about the topic and we'll read out our favourite responses on the bonus episode at the end of this series. We'd love to hear from you.
Email info@thirdmagazine.co.uk. That's third with three I's. Or message us on the gram @thirdmagazine.
If you want to see some BTS, head to our TikTok where you can see what went down in the recording of this show.
You can also catch more from us on our website, thirdmagazine.co.uk.
If you're enjoying listening to us during this series, you might want to check out one of our earlier shows or mini-series. There's All My Half East Asian BFFs, where I chat with friends who share a white and East Asian mixed heritage.
And 20 single episodes to listen back to, covering rich topics such as dark tourism,
love and relationships,
cultural appropriation,
and cancel culture. And don't forget to help spread the word. Share the show with a friend, a colleague, your mum, or just rate and review us wherever you're listening.
All of the music you've been hearing on this episode is by the versatile Afro-electronic DJ and producer Sensi Lo. You can connect with her on Instagram at senseilo.